we really don't want security to be a roadblock or sort of a hammer where we say, hey, do this. It's more of a partnership where we work with engineering and sort of come to collaborative decisions saying this is the right way forward for the company.
Hi, you're listening to The Secure Developer. It's part of the MyDevSecOps community, a platform for developers, operators, and security people to share their views and practices on DevSecOps, Dev and Sec collaboration, cloud security, and more. Check out mydevsecops.io to join the community and find other great resources. This podcast is sponsored by Sneak. Sneak is a dev-first security company helping companies fix vulnerabilities in open source components and containers without slowing down development. To learn more, visit sneak.io.
Hello, and thanks for tuning back into The Secure Developer. Today, we're going to try a different format of an episode. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of having various guests that have tried, sometimes succeeded, sometimes failed, and definitely always learned to embed security with developers. And they all had maybe that similar mission, but they have different learnings along the way, and they tried different approaches. Oftentimes, different guests might mention the same practice or similar practices, but again, they have a different perspective on it and they might have different experiences to share. So what we're going to try and do here is combine different perspectives on the same practice into a packaged episode so that you can learn about that practice and get the different flavors of it to see what works best for you. For this first format of this episode, we're going to focus on security champions, and we're going to hear four different perspectives on this practice. Security champions, at a high level, deals with tapping specific individuals in the development team to act as security champions, and typically those people get trained maybe a little bit more on security, they might be more interested in security, and they on one hand act as security center points within their development teams, and on the other hand help communicate and connect to the security teams themselves. We're going to hear perspectives on security champions that range from sort of big and small companies and also are in different levels of maturity. First, we're going to go back to episode 59, when I spoke to Steve White of Pivotal, that was subsequently acquired by VMware, and he shares his experiences about security champions, not just from his time as a chief security officer, but also working with other chief security officers that are Pivotal or VMware customers. Let's hear Steve's perspective.
There's a lot of different ways you get after that. I'm a big fan. I've seen a lot of success in what I have historically called sort of the security champions program, right? And that, you know, the security champions tend to be, it's like a way you help the development teams get invested and take ownership of security for their code, right? The stuff that they're creating. And it's difficult to try to train everyone all the time and get them really enthusiastic about security things, right? I think that's not effective for most organizations, right? It's to try to get an entire development team jazzed about security, you know? And so it's like pick same ideas like I have on the security side is on the developer side. Pick a person, one person who's part of the team who has some enthusiasm for security, who has some understanding or some background in why it's important, and invest in them, right? Give them some additional training, delegate to them some responsibility, right? That perhaps the security team might have held within their arms previously. Find a security champion and say, hey, we're going to invest some training and we're going to invest in some responsibility, right? That now because you're on the team, we're going to take off the reins some, right? We're going to take off some controls, loosen the guardrails, and give there more flexibility within this operating framework because you now have a security voice embedded within the team. That person, because they are a day-to-day functioning member of the team, can find incremental ways, right, to help the team make small changes or do small things a little better. And so I'm a big fan of kind of that natural growth of security awareness inside of a team. The second part of that, right, is frankly, it's to move security tooling and security validation earlier in their process, right? We all like to talk about this shift left thing, right, with security. Although if you ever look at the DevOps lifecycle, it's a continuous loop. So how you shift left in a loop is beyond me, but nonetheless, we still use that terminology. For me, it's simply, where do I provide security feedback to the developers? in a more timely fashion and in a way that's consistent with the way they work, right? That's always been one of the challenges is in security, like we'll run our SaaS and our DAS tools somewhere down in the pipeline, and all we do is send them a report of 1,000 vulnerabilities in their code and we're done, right? And that's just not how you build those bridges, right? It's not how you build that awareness. And so finding ways to give those developers actionable real-time feedback as close to the time they write the code as possible. And then making sure that when you're providing security-related findings or feedback or what have you, that it really actually truly is actionable. It's not fanciful. It's not, well, if you, we have this tendency in security to sort of take the high ground, right? It's like all the vulnerabilities have to be gone. There can't be a single line of misplaced code. That's not really where we need to be, right? One of the advice I've heard from others who I respect in the space is pick a particular security problem you're going to focus on, say, for a month, and have all the development teams focus on that one class of vulnerability, like SQL injection. You know, we like to pick on that because that's a pretty bad one. All the teams focus on SQL injection this month, and so we're going to turn the knob up, right? We're going to turn the noise level up on SQL injection this month. And we're going to do everything we can. And then next month, we'll look at something else. But engage the teams in that conversation about what it should be, how they should receive the feedback, what's best for them. If you actually engage the developers in that conversation, I think you'll ultimately get better results. So those are some of the keys.
All great advice. No, I very much resonate to sort of the whole shift left. I like to say it's not shift left, it's top to bottom. It's the sort of go to sort of the from central governance to central controls. Sort of bottom up and empower teams. Small question about the practicality of the Security Champions program. I mean, lots of good things to say about it. One of the pushbacks is that organizations don't always acknowledge that this developer, you know, the person in the development team who's now been sort of added some form of authority might have a different job. I mean, how do you recommend or sort of how do you see work best for organizations that do that Security Champion in terms of the role description for the Security Champion? Is it a percentage less work that they do on the product side? I mean, how does it relate to their day job?
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting question. And I think is also in some ways a cultural question, right? So if you are trying to measure output of individual developers down to the level where if they spent 2 hours on Security Champion work, it would show up in some developer productivity metric, I think you need to question the cultural approach to that. Because frankly, output of development organizations should be focused minimally on the team output. There is very little external measure, I would argue, that is effective at measuring explicit individual developer productivity, and especially in organizations where you're pairing, right? Because now it's like, well, am I measuring the pair? And so frankly, I would first say, if you're trying to measure individual developer productivity at that level, I think you need to ask some tough questions about, is that really effective? And is that, you know, really the culture you want to drive? And so if you take that up a level and you're measuring productivity and impact, it's really more about impact and feature flow and the team metrics, right? Are they getting impactful things to the customers? Do the customers love what they deliver? Do they deliver frequently? Those kinds of metrics are what's important. I would argue that you're not going to see a big change in that by having one person spend some time on Security Champion types of duties. The other thing is that once trained, so there is a training period, and during that period, there may be some reduction in flow, but the responsibilities of a security champion are really just to speak up during planning, right? Or speak up during design sessions, to ask the questions of the team, you know, did you think about this? Or did we include this? Or is this something that really should go through a deeper security review? It doesn't take a lot of work, right? It's not a big investment time. It's like a focus versus amount of effort kind of thing. So it shouldn't take a lot of time.
Next, we're going to go a little bit further back in time to episode 42, where I've had the pleasure of having Kate from The Guardian on the show. And Kate came into security within The Guardian from the engineering group into security. And she basically saw the security champions program both from the dev side and from the security side, and actually found herself organizing and driving it a little bit. So the Guardian's security champions and general security practices have evolved a fair bit since this episode, but I still feel like this is a very valuable perspective.
Before I even joined The Guardian, we always had a system of security champions or security agents. We kind of switched between the two names. Mm-hmm. So trying to get developers who are interested in security or just want to learn more about it to come to semi-regular meetings where we might try and learn something together or run through kind of like one of the small training games that like various websites have, or maybe use it as a bit of a knowledge sharing opportunity. So that's been really good as a way of ensuring there's somewhere that people can ask for help or talk about things that might have happened to them. It's also a really good forum to discuss security incidents or potential security incidents. So if someone's noticed something strange going on, then they might mention it that type of meeting, and then it drives a bit of discussion. And then you might have someone ask a question about a particular vulnerability, and then someone else explains it. So that's a really good way of doing communication and engagement.
How does it logistically operate, this group? So like you mentioned, sharing and meeting, how often does this group meet? What are the rough ratios of sort of security agents to developers?
So I'm normally the one that organizes it. So if I'm being organized, it's once a month. So it might just be kind of like myself from the InfoSec team there, and then hopefully developers from our different development teams. So kind of like a mix of people from different seniority levels and different projects. So hopefully covering most of the areas, which is good, because then if you have an announcement to make or a bit of guidance or advice to give out, then you can encourage them to share it on with their teams. On top of that, you might also want to do additional sessions. So I'm running a Halloween session so I can share all of the scary stories that have happened over the last year.
That's a great one. Do you also use, like you talked a lot about sort of these people coming along and sharing within the group problems or sort of sharing experiences, do they also serve as good advocates, right? Or sort of extensions of you inside the different teams? And do you have any learnings about, you know, what did and didn't work in trying to achieve that?
Yeah, so I think something that works quite well is having smaller focus sessions. So not necessarily having too many people along, because if you've got lots of people in a room, it tends to make some people less likely to speak up or more worried to admit that they don't know something or to ask questions. So particularly with new developers, I like to try and have them for like a one-on-one or maybe two-on-one intro session to explain how we approach security at The Guardian and the fact that it is a shared responsibility and that they should never feel bad about asking questions about it, even if it's just saying, is this quite right? And then it's a good time to also talk to people about how to look after passwords and how to kind of like set a strong password and why multi-factor authentication is amazing. Because yeah, with our developers, I imagine like most places, our developers have got quite privileged access. So they can run pretty much anything on their laptops and they can access an awful lot of systems. So you really, really, really want to make sure that they understand how not to get hacked.
For the next one, we're going to go even further back in time to episode 24, where we spoke to Omer Levi-Chevroni, which at the time was a maven, which is a security champion in their local program, at Soluto, which is a child company of Asurion. We actually have the pleasure of having Omer now work on application security at Sneak and is doing a great job. But let's sort of hear his perspectives on being a security champion at Asurion back then.
So this is what I started with. I started at Soluto as a developer, and I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah, it was more than 2 years ago. Asurion started an initiative called, it comes from Asurion Security. They understood that they have more and more developers all around the world, and they can no longer maintain security from sitting in Nashville or in San Mateo or wherever they're sitting, mm-hmm, influencing the entire R&D all over the globe. So they started a program called the Security Mavens, which is basically like other companies called the Security Champions. It's basically the same thing, which is instead of going and hire external security expert in each R&D and started to embed them into the R&D, they choose developers from all around the globe, give them security education. For example, I did sans pen testing course. It was 1 week of a course and then a test. So we did this course and we started to work together as a Mavens. We are now a group. We have a Slack channel. We're talking a lot. And this is how I get into all this security AppSec world. Currently here at Tel Aviv, we have 2 Mavens and we started to add more because we understand we need more. So this is how it's all started. We are now interacting. There is someone in assurance security team that is responsible on the Maven. So we are communicating a lot with him for guidance and help and to learn more of what we want. And here at Tel Aviv, like all other people here, have a lot of freedom to add things and try to think about things that can improve the security here.
Yeah. Do the Mavens typically, like yourself and the other Maven, the name's catchy, you know, just roll with it.
You know that the source of the word Maven is Yiddish, actually.
Oh, I did not know.
Yeah, it comes from the word Mavin, which is in Hebrew, no. It's really funny.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I guess because it's history. Yet another reason to have 2 Mavens in the in the Tel Aviv team. So do the Mavens typically have a part of their day job? Like, is your day job security, or is your day job a bunch of other things and security, and you're just sort of passionate and therefore find yourself doing security? And I guess, how does that similar or different to other Mavens across the Syrian?
That's a good question. One of the main challenges of being a Maven, and I've seen that with the entire Mavens, is that you need to be a Maven beside of your regular day job. I very fast understood that this is what I want to do full time, and I think there are not a lot of Mavens who are doing it full time. Mm-hmm. And I did it full time for the 1.5 year, and then I joined the DevOps team. So now I do a part of a regular DevOps task, like building Kubernetes cluster or stuff like that, and security task, and try to combine them. But it's definitely very, very hard to find the right spot between doing your regular job and doing the Maven stuff, because it's not easy. You have tasks that you need to complete, and you need to somehow think about security things. So this is a challenge of being a Maven.
Yeah.
And I had lucky to not have it.
Yeah. And I guess, but it's the versatility also of the program where it's relevant, then, you know, people would have that as a full-time job versus not.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I think, like, the Maven program, I want to spend a couple more minutes on that one still, just because it sounds like it's working well. And I think it's a program that many people try to do. Can you tell a little bit about, like, how is knowledge shared within Maven? Like, you mentioned the Slack channel internally. What other good tooling or methodologies work to sort of share information between Mavens?
So we have a few virtual meetings, 1 or 2 in a year. We also try to meet like in big conference. For example, in 2 months, some of us are going to be at AFSA California. I'm going to give a talk there. So we will be there, we will talk together, hang out. Last year, we did an internal conf for all the Mavens, right, AFSA California, and we might do it again this year. Or, for example, do it at DEF CON Black Hat USA. So this is an example to where we can meet, share ideas, and learn from what others are doing. Mm-hmm. So sharing is hard, but we try to do it as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And different events have different challenges. So this is also interesting to see what they face, what we are facing. For example, there is someone from assurance security team who is responsible for all the Mavens. So he also helped us, like, to say, okay, they face the issue you're facing. Maybe you should talk with them.
Right.
So you do the coordination.
Yeah, it makes sense. So basically, like, a component of it is just natural social interactions. You're on the Slack meeting.
Yeah.
You meet up. You naturally go to some sort of the same events. And then you meet up and share knowledge there. And some of it is a little bit more coordinated by the person in the central security team whose job it is to make this program successful.
Part of his job, yeah.
Or part of his job.
Yeah, his main job is he's responsible for application security. So it makes sense that Mavens is part of his job.
It's one of his primary tools, I guess, or sort of primary means of succeeding that.
Yeah.
Last and very much not least, we're going to talk to Yash from Twilio. And Yash was on episode 66, a bit more recent, and they run a very sophisticated, in my opinion, or at least very thought through security champions program with great incentives and recognition for the champions in that program. Let's hear Yash describe the program.
Product security specifically works very closely with engineering, right? We look at it as a partnership of sorts. Like, we really don't want security to be a roadblock or sort of a hammer where we say, hey, do this. It's more of a partnership where we work with engineering and sort of come to collaborative decisions saying this is the right way forward for the company. Security Champions program is something that helps us do that on a large scale. The idea of the program is an engineer on every engineering team. is their dedicated security champion. And then there's one security engineer who's their dedicated security partner. This security partner and champion meet on a regular basis and then talk through what the engineering team is doing, what the security team is doing, what reviews they need, what help security can provide, do things securely and make sure that they're building robust and secure solutions. What helps in this sort of format is all the reviews are scheduled on a timely basis. Otherwise, the other sort of side of it is engineers build the whole product. And once they're ready to deploy, somebody says, hey, let's do a security review on their blog for you don't know how many days or weeks. It can be based on the project size. With the Champions program, these reviews sort of happen in tandem as the engineering team is building, and we can give real-time feedback, and it's easy for them to make changes. There's very less friction, and we don't affect their timelines. And at the same time, we help them sort of do things the right way.
Yeah, and secure. So I'm curious a little bit about some ratios here. So you mentioned that the security champion is aligned to someone in the product security team. What's the rough ratio you aim for in terms of product security? How many security champions does every product security person work with?
So that's something that I've been debating with myself for a long time. Like, what's the appropriate ratio of like security engineers to engineers within the company? I don't have like a good answer, but what we're trying to do is instead of talk about the numbers, talk about capabilities within the product security team, and also in terms of champions, look at how big or significant the product or product group that these engineering teams belong to, and then sort of divide it based on that. So it would be like an engineer has five products under them or products under them based on the size of the products.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's still the mission orientation that product security person is still more mindful and aware of the substance and the surrounding context when a request comes in. Yep. But indeed, some products are big, some are small, some are more hairy, you know, from a security perspective than others. And the security champions, you know, within the teams, is this an official role? Like, do their managers expect them to spend some 20% of their time on security, or is it more just general interest? I mean, how do they manage that extra responsibility?
It is an official role. The percent of time that they spend on security is team specific. We don't like mandate a percentage of time that the champions spend doing security stuff. What we expect them to do is sort of meet with their security partners regularly, talk about their team security posture, and sort of work with their partner to improve their product security posture over time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are the security champions themselves a community within Twilio? Like, do they also engage with one another, or is there like, you know, a specific education for them? Or is it more about the one-to-one relationships?
It's both. So we do have one-to-one relations. And like this year, we wanted to expand on that security champions as a community, do happy hours and a lot of other social events. But COVID-19 happens, everyone's stuck at home. So that isn't happening. The other thing you mentioned was like training. So within the champions program, we have a sub program called the Advanced Champions Program, where we have red, blue, and purple sort of categories, which have like challenges, requirements to do X, Y, and Z sort of things, which are aimed at offensive for the red, defensive for blue and purple. We kind of modeled it as like a cloud security subspace within the program. And as they do these, we kind of give them more perks and responsibilities that otherwise they wouldn't have had. And the ideology behind it is you take these trainings, you do these challenges, you level up your security knowledge, and then we as a security team will trust you to make these decisions, which now you have enough knowledge to make the right decision for.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That's a great thing to do. And I must imagine that these things are sort of acknowledged as a skill set and a learning by the different management teams, and it might help them as they sort of move up the ranks or as they might want to move into security, right, in some cases.
Yep, that is true. And this sort of ties back into how much time a manager expects their champion to sort of spend doing security work once they sort of start their journey on these different tracks. They generally put it into their sprints and work on it as a story ticket, like something as a general work item rather than on the side. And most of the managers are like happy that people on their team are interested in this and spending time learning security.
That's it for the Security Champions program. I hope you enjoyed this format and would love to hear from you about what we should be doing differently about it if you can email us at thesecuredeveloper@sneak.io. That's it for today for The Secure Developer. I hope you join us for the next one.